welcome back to the Film Society podcast, and happy new year to all listeners out there. So this is our first podcast of the year 2023. It's like, when you say it, it's like the future, isn't it? The year 2023. You'd be like a Blade Runner or something. So yeah, so starting off the 2023 with a bang, we are discussing the film Moonlight. So Chirone, a young African-American man, grapples with his identity and sexuality while experiencing the everyday struggles of childhood, adolescence, and burgeoning adulthood with a single addict mother Paula in a crime-ridden neighbourhood in Miami. It is written and directed by Barry Jenkins, the great Barry Jenkins, and co-written by Terrell Alvin McCreary. It stars Mahershala Ali, Oscar winner, Naomi Harris, Trevante Rhodes, Alex Hibbert, Janelle Monáe, and Ashton Sanders. So this week, this choice actually is the first time we've had like a mixed bag. This time, so usually every film that we've been choosing is kind of being unanimous. We've all really enjoyed it. Usually get 4s to 5s out of 5. But also we are joined by two new members of our society. Right? They're putting little pieces at me. Is say hello and you're fine. Right, so our two S4s, we have Morgan, say hello.
Hello.
And Emily.
Hi.
See, oh, young bloody. They're so nervous, everyone. Oh, if you can't see it. But yeah, so again, what we've been talking about, right? There's a lot of strong themes throughout this movie. Also, it won the 2017 Oscar. I don't know, for those of you who don't know the story of that, it beat La La Land, but yeah.
We don't talk about it.
It's still a sore subject. I still can't remember the fact that they fought La La Land won because Warren Beatty read out the card that says Emma Stone, La La Land. And he read it, and then turns out Moonlight won. Again,
it's kind of awkward.
It was very awkward, but again, both very good films and very different films as well. So, one thing about this film is unique is the structure of it. And what I thought about as well, it was the film Boyhood. It was released previously. You know what Boyhood is? It was filmed over 12 years. And it's like the ultimate coming of age story where you're literally seeing these characters, actors grow in front of your eyes. Whereas Moonlight almost similarly emulates that, but this time it's different actors playing the same role, so you literally see this character grow old in front of your eyes as to rather than the actors as well. So it's a three-act structure dealing obviously with his childhood, adolescence and adulthood. And the first chapter is called Little, then you have Chiron, and then you have Black, which seems random, we were discussing it just now, but there are reasons for why they're called that. Right, so the first thing we're going to talk about then is the chapter called Little, and this is basically where we see Chiron at a very young age and his kind of growing up in the rough streets of Miami. But the opening shot is not of Chiron, it's Juan. If you remember the opening shot, it's a car in the street, which is now officially called Moonlight Avenue because of it. They've changed the name to it, which is awesome. So yeah, it is basically his car. And he drives over across the block and basically to confirm a drug deal. So we're almost thinking he's the hero, he's the character we root for in this film. But he's a drug dealer, right? So he's not exactly the greatest of role models. But what we're talking about later on as well is the impact and effect that Juan has on Chiron's life throughout, the influence that he has, big time. So obviously what happens there, we see Juan, his drug deal, and then it cuts to Little being chased by his peers at the Penitentiary School. And he gets chased to what can only be described as a crack den.
That's what it is, a crack den.
I mean, he's literally like taking the boards off the windows and doors to break into it. He's like running for his life, this little boy running for his life from these peers. And then later on, he's been hiding there for ages to the point that it's almost nighttime. Yeah? So then Juan, I mean, he's obviously noticed what's happened here. He comes in, opens the window, takes the wood off the window, and comes in and tries to comfort Little. And then, so, because Little's so, almost like terrified, traumatised, he's really quiet, he's almost borderline mute, isn't he, at this point? Yeah. And so what Juan has to do is he has to take Little back to his girlfriend's home, played by Janelle Monáe, who again appears in the second chapter as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only actress who actor who appears in all three chapters is Naomi Harris, the mum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, every other character is played by different actors.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'll talk more about Naomi Harris later on, but it's quite an interesting fact about her. So again, Jeremy has this very motherly presence, even though Juan, we find out he's a drug dealer, and she knows he's a drug dealer, but you're still rooting for this almost like put together family,
mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah,
because he's wanting to comfort him. And it's really quite a sin to see. So then eventually he stays the night because he doesn't tell him the address and so on, or he's too scared or ashamed, we don't know, it could be either,
mm-hmm,
about where he stays. And then we meet Naomi Harris's Paula. Oh, mother of the year, shall we say. Mother of the year, yeah. She's coming home from work because she's actually a nurse. And so that's the crazy thing as well, a nurse with a drug addiction at the same time. So, and then she's asking what happens and where's he been and so on. And she obviously knows Juan from the streets.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what he is because it's actually him selling her the drugs, which we'll find out later on. So again, it's quite I think we can agree that it's a pretty strong and impactful opening. Do we have any thoughts about that opening sequence to the film Moonlight or the chapter of Little at all?
It was definitely my favourite one out of the three. I think it was the most enjoyable to watch, in a way.
And so do you think because, again, more happened in that opening chapter?
Definitely, yeah.
But also as well, what you saw is later on, because obviously they resolve the issue and Paula tells Little to stay away from Juan and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But then we see Little play with his classmates, play football, or I mean, it's called soccer, football.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we meet Kevin for the first time.
Yeah.
Little Kevin. And he calls him Little. So that is his nickname. And that's why that's why the chapter's called Little. And it's very strange, right? Is again, it's a one way to look at it is complete child naivety about they don't know better. But there's a lot of commenting on each other's looks between the two boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially, you know, it's like again, you need to get you bigger, you look kind of bigger, strong, all that kind of stuff. So it's almost like sowing the seeds for almost little secret.
Yeah,
as well, isn't it? And this is what the film is about. Because again, normally films like this, they're usually dark and gritty, and they almost oppose homosexuality. It's almost seen as a cardinal sin.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I have to say, especially in the gangster black community, as a cardinal sin,
mm-hmm,
to be homosexual.
Yeah.
So to have this main character like that is pretty insane. So. And then for me, it's the heartbreaking bit coming up. Is obviously what happens is it is shot so well. You have this super slow motion image of Paula screaming at Little, screaming at him. We don't know at the time what's been said because it's muted, but you got that Nicholas Britell score booming in the background. The almost like unconventional violin music. That's one thing about the score. I thought it was quite unconventional score.
Yeah,
some bits quite poetic. And sometimes I don't want to say uncomfortable. It's almost like off kilter to make you feel the same way as they do.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then what happens? We cut later on to Little going to see Juan,
mm-hmm,
and they're having breakfast because obviously it's a regular thing now that Little chaps Juan's door because it's always attached to this male role model. He doesn't have a male role model. There's no dad at home.
Yeah.
So as little kids, little boys do, they go seeking their own male role models. So he's waiting for outside the house for him, for Juan to come home. So they're having breakfast or brunch, depending on what time of day it is. It doesn't really say what time of day it is. And they're feeding them. And then Little asks Juan a question. What is the question that Juan asks? Sorry, that Little asks Juan.
He asks him, like, what is this word? But I don't know, like, is that what he asks?
Yes, exactly what he asks.
He asks, what, because he's obviously, that's when we find out kind of what his mum called him. Called him a homophobic slur.
Yeah.
And he asks Juan what that word means.
And if he is one.
And if he is one, yeah.
Yeah. And I think as well, if you think about it, I think this scene is handled with so much sensitivity. I love about it. It's handled so beautifully because actually the script written by Tyrell Alvin McCraney and Barry Jenkins, it reflects their own life experiences because they both had drug-addicted mothers. But that homosexuality comes from Tyrell. Do you know what I mean? But they both grew up in that same neighbourhood where it's set. But what I love is how the two adults handle the situation. It's against stereotype, I think. Because you've got this hyper-masculine drug dealer male who's meant to be that, but he's not really. He's a sensitive soul. And he basically is talking about the idea of, well, you don't know. You just know. And you know, and I find that quite poetic about that and really sweet because he says, don't ever, it's basically what he says was, it's a word to make homosexual people feel bad and hate themselves. That's what he says. So don't let anyone, because don't let anyone call you that. Not because he's ashamed for Little to be homosexual, but the impact and the hate behind that word, I think he's trying to take that away and take Little to almost like prepare and defend himself with that as well. I think that's a big part of it. So, yeah, so again, is this all like laying the main groundwork for the character who Little is pretty much going to be? And it's a shame because, you know, Juan's only in this chapter and Mahershala Ali won an Oscar for pretty much a 15-minute role in total, because what, again, what's beautiful, it's actually, I keep saying the word beautiful for this film, because it's the only way to describe it. It's stunning, you know, in so many ways, even though nothing much happens in the way of incidents. But I totally know, again, it's a beautiful film, it's like, it's a work of art.
It's a work of art, definitely.
You know, it's an art movie. It's like that way how you'd be in a museum or an art gallery and you stand and you look at a painting. Nothing has to happen. You just immerse yourself in that art. I think that's what I like about this film. And I think people get different things from it. So you get this wonderful, beautiful scene about Juan teaching Little to swim. And what maybe I'm looking too much into this. So see, even the way he's holding, he says, lie back, put your head back. And Little's kind of spread out, lying on his back, flat out. It's almost reminiscent of a christening or a baptism.
That is something that I thought when I first watched it. It was almost like he was, in a way, like baptizing him into this life that he's going to live, and like sort of preparing him in a way. Like that's kind of the way I felt, like, thought about it.
Yeah, could this be an absolute form of foreshadowing here for the life that he's going to end up living as well? But and again, reading about this film, because obviously before we do these podcasts, I do a wee bit of research. I do a lot of copy and pasting. And one of the things that I read was that scene was real. Mahershala Ali actually taught Little Alex Hibbert to swim for the first time in that scene. So it wasn't really a rehearsal. They just went in and filmed that scene. And I think that's the magic of Barry Jenkins' work in this movie, is there's something just so real about it. Yes, it is definitely an art form. There's a sense of escapism in it because of the way it's shot. But through it, it's this very human story. I think, and about what it is to find your place in this world and so on.
It doesn't feel rehearsed in a way. It feels like you're kind of watching this happen for the first time. Like sometimes you watch films and you're like, you can tell it's been like going over.
Well blocked and that kind of stuff.
But this, it just felt, it was very natural.
So even then, so you could even describe it as a semi-documentary. Especially the handheld shots. You mean, especially that water scene, because you literally see the camera going above and under the water. And it just shows you, I think, because it had virtually zero budget, this movie. It was also produced and distributed by Plan B, which is Brad Pitt's company, as well. Ooh, a lot of scorned faces for this. All personal life aside. Again, that's what Plan B as a company does. Funnily enough, it does raise... and always promote black voices because it also produced 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, wow.
I like that.
yeah, even though there is a slight white saviour complex in it, played by Brad Pitt himself, it comes to the last 20 minutes, he spent like 2.5 hours watching this horrible life.
Mm-hmm.
He meets Brad Pitt, a Canadian joiner, and then he goes, oh, I'll help you. Like, what? And Brad Pitt went, hey, I'm gonna save slavery. I'm gonna
single-handedly.
Well done, Brad Pitt. Well done. You can do no wrong. Oh, and the room goes silent. So yeah, with that, it's this beautiful scene. But again, what follows is the heartbreak.
Definitely.
Because does anyone remember how this chapter ends? Do you remember at all? Or some...
Is it with them at the table?
Yeah, it goes back to the table again.
Yep. And is it Little asking Quan if his mum's addicted to drugs?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And then, again, Quan being Quan and being the very honest and stable role model of his life answers, yes, she is addicted to drugs. Do you remember the follow-up question was?
So are you a drug dealer or do you sell drugs or something like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Do you sell drugs? And then... Do you sell drugs to my mum?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And it's a shame. It also, for me, yeah, he's been dying for his male role model. But I don't mean it's in a derogatory way. He's a mama's boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a mama's boy. Do you know what I mean? He's still that unconditional love for his mum, no matter how awful she is to him. But isn't that almost like ingrained in kids' DNA to an extent?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I think that's what this kind of film deals with. And it deals with this little, the little mistakes that people make and inform themselves later on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found that whole sequence utterly, utterly heartbreaking. And I feel like I'll probably use the word quite a lot in this podcast, the word heartbreaking, because that's what it is.
Yeah,
it's heartbreaking, it's melancholic. Beautiful at the same time. Yes, I totally agree because there's no major incidents that happen. Mm-hmm. Which you kind of, I know, I'm not picking away, I don't mean to do that. But it's almost like you're waiting for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Given, but isn't that the idea of this film? It flips and inverts stereotypes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's the idea we associate drug black gang culture with violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the film's set in this same setting, but we're not getting that. There's one or two acts of pure violence
mm-hmm.
in this movie, but they don't occur until the second chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's our kind of discussion on the first chapter, which I think we agree is probably the strongest of the three, do we think?
Yeah.
You think with that? But then I think we'll see the second chapter with Chai Ron. Well, first of all, it's the first time he's referred to by his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's Chiron, you know? Because even Juan called him Little Man.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Never addressed by his name.
Yeah.
Here's our question. Why do we think, like, in the first chapter, he wasn't referred to by his name? Why is that? What impact do you think that has then? Good question, yeah.
Definitely something to do with, like, his identity. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of the part of the film, it's talking about how he discovers himself and accepts himself. But then in this, like, early stage of his life, he's never actually been called by his name. So I suppose that might take away some self of, like, some sense of self
100%.
For his character.
Oh, see. I'm sorry, am I being proud too loud? Oh my god, I feel like I'm doing something right in my classes. No, I totally agree. Also, does it make the almost like the themes universal?
Yeah.
Because it represents every young gay black boy in America. I'm not saying every gay young black boy has a drug addicted mother. I'm not saying that. But there's a sense of universality to that. The fact that, as you say, finding oneself, isn't it? Especially when you're fighting and questioning and exploring your own sexuality as well. So yeah, there we go. So we got Chiron. He's stretched.
Yep.
I think.
Oh, yeah.
He's stretched.
Definitely.
Hasn't really got bigger, has he?
No.
Kevin still calls him little. Still calls him little. But also, what we also start hearing as well is his other nickname.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
in this. Do we remember what the other nickname was? What Kevin Costner's calling him? Because it's actually a comment on his race.
Is it black?
It's black. Yeah. It's black. Yeah. Yeah. Which, again, is a reference to a story that Juan said on the beach. Right? And this is where mm-hmm. the title comes from, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He said because Juan grew up in Cuba. So essentially, he's Hispanic.
Mm-hmm,
and yeah. he's not black. Whereas little Chiron is black.
Mm-hmm.
And what Juan says that there's an old lady in his neighborhood in back in Cuba says, when the moonlight hits a black boy's skin, they turn blue. Hence moonlight.
Mm-hmm,
so again, is that reference from Kevin again, because he's calling black because they do have different skin tones, skin color as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's a big part of the identity as well. So not only are you figuring your identity through sexuality and orientation, you're figuring it through race
mm-hmm.
as yeah. well. Do you know what I mean? Because he is very different from the other boys around him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Paula says in the start as well. Because do you ever wonder why the kids are still picking on him?
Mm-hmm.
They know to pick on him. It's almost like, unfortunately, in high school, it's survival of the fittest sometimes.
Yeah.
So, you know? And unfortunately, some people in high school can spot weakness or sniff it out. Sniff out weakness. And these kids in his school in Moonlight sniffed out a weakness.
Yep.
They know he's different. Mm-hmm. They probably don't know entirely why or how he's different, especially the first chapter. But the second chapter with Chiron has come more to light because he's getting called the little the slurs in school and stuff like that, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, then we introduced to an older version of Kevin as well, because it's actually, who is it? Ashton Sanders plays the older version of Chiron,
mm-hmm.
and Janelle Jerome plays the old version of Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're seeing Kevin now, right, is, I don't know how we have boys in this school, right, who might overcompensate in several ways.
Mm-hmm.
Their self of manliness and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a man.
I feel they need to say certain things.
Certain things.
Yeah. To prove their masculinity.
Exactly. So, all right, we're tripping on to that toxic masculinity out of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin is talking about his conquests in this movie. Yeah. And he's talking about, oh, like, calm down, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Are you 14? Shut up. But everyone, because obviously they're best pals, but it's almost like the language that he uses is overly sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And this is a kind of film that you have to kind of read between the lines with.
Yep.
So yeah. You have these two boys, these two teenage boys, talking in overtly sexual language to each other because they're open like that. A lot of guys are not that open with the language like they are in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So already, is that a hint or subtle hint on how comfortable they are together
mm-hmm.
yeah. with that, which yeah. you find out later on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and again, I'll be honest with you, some of the people in his class, like, they're men.
Yeah.
they're yeah. actual men.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, like, when I went to high school, like, I had, like, a caterpillar in my top lip, which blew off in a windy day. Do you know what I mean? I was built like a skinny twig, like like Chiron in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came to like these the bully, shall we say, it's like you're a man.
Uh-huh.
You're a man. It's like, I mean, you've got an arm that's like a snake that's swallowed or in the process of swallowing an animal.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this kind of this big muscle in the middle of it. You know, yeah. What the heck is that? And he's got this big, almost like this big mane of dreadlocks as well.
Yeah.
Very intimidating character.
Yeah.
Intimidating character. So at the same time, although we're learning more about Chiron and how he's still going to Juan's partner's house, because it's still almost like a surrogate mother in a way.
Yeah.
But Juan's not in the picture, because what happened to Juan?
Died.
He died. And again, that's not, it's not overtly revealed. It's kind of hinted at
mm-hmm.
for some of the dialogue, but we'll come to that later on. But we're also, Paula makes a comeback. Oh, good old Paula. Oh. Well, I feel like you would say, I love Bob. For those of you at home, sometimes what happens in class is if we all say we hate something in class, Holly would be the only person to go, "Ah, you probably like that." So, but we're looking at Holly, don't worry. We love you, Julie. And we love you, Perkins. So, yes, so, but also, he gets given money, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, to make sure he fits himself and looks after himself and stuff like that. He goes home, and Paula's home. Mother of Year Part 2. Right? So what happens here? Do you remember what happens here with Paula?
She gets really aggressive with him.
She starts to try reason him first, yeah, and play the sweet mum card.
Mm-hmm.
But this is textbook addictive behaviour.
Manipulation.
Yeah. Emotional manipulation. I'm your mother. I was like, after you, I raised you. Didn't really. But I raised you. And then he says, "I don't have any money, I don't have any money." The aggression kicks in.
Because she knows the manipulation isn't going to work.
Not going to work. She has to be aggressive. Because that's what he responds to, is aggression now. Mm-hmm. She knows that. Remember I said about pinpointing weakness?
Yep.
Yeah.
Earlier on. I kind of think it's the same idea with the mum as well. So then eventually she takes the money off him. And what's she going to buy?
Drugs.
Not that nice dinner.
No.
Oh, honestly, I don't know how the wee man does it, to be honest with you, go through that. So then, dealing with all this, he's also starting to have dreams about a certain someone. Who is he starting to have dreams about?
Kevin.
Yeah. I don't want to go too much detail into the dream he has, because that's a little bit uncomfortable, but we'll say it fuels the fire for his burning passion for Kevin. I think I'll run that pretty well, guys. Pretty well. It's the teacher in me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, so he wakes up with a cold sweat because of it, and obviously, other stains in the bed.
Uh-oh.
I would say that. Yeah, so that, again, fuels this idea about him confusing his sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's trying to hide it.
Yeah.
So, he goes to school, he's talking to Kevin, but and all, because also at this point as well, he's already been chased home, well, followed home by the bullies,
mm-hmm,
to his home. And do you remember the kind of stuff the bullies were saying to him?
But his clothes and
his
stuff.
His clothes, because obviously he's not dressed like your stereotypical black teenager.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this in representation in class not long ago, how they're meant to be shown and depicted in movies.
Yeah.
I say that horribly, but that's the media for you. So there's not this hip hop aesthetic that they have, whereas he's not. It's kind of the plaid shirt. And so also what happens as well is for make fun of his clothes, but also start talking about his mum.
Yeah,
he's talking about his mum and the lengths that she goes to get money and drugs.
Yep.
And they head on and say, "Well, I'm going to ask your mum for the lengths that she goes to as well." And that kicks him off because, like I said, I don't mean it in a derogatory way again. He's a mama's boy.
Mm-hmm.
That's his trigger.
Yeah.
That's his trigger. You know what I mean? And that's where he starts. He becomes aggressive then. Goes, "What did you say?"
Mm-hmm.
And he starts physically stepping up to him as well.
Yeah.
So I found that quite a powerful movement. Mm-hmm. And it's as subtle as it was. And I feel like the more you talk about this movie, the more you unpack from it.
Definitely.
As well. So stuff like that. So, yeah. And then it gets even better as well. And we see, so he goes back to school and the bully has spoke to Kevin to play it because he played this game when they were younger, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the game. It was something to knock down.
Yeah.
Was it something like that?
Yeah.
Knockdown? And basically Kevin is known for being able to hit someone very, very hard to the point they don't get back up or they struggle to back up.
Mm-hmm.
So again, manipulation kicks in here. But obviously, before we go into that bit in a bit more detail, there's a special moment / rendezvous we talk about.
Yeah.
Not in too much detail, but we'll talk about it. So, Kevin and Chiron are kind of walking on the beach and so on. And what you're seeing are two very openly, I want to say, I'm not being vulnerable as in, or poor him, is allowing themselves to be vulnerable with each other.
Yeah.
I think that's a different side of vulnerability. That's what I mean by that. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that there. And what kind of happens is probably one of the most intimate and even beautiful moments that I've seen in cinema recently, to be honest with you. And even the way it's shot, yes, it is a sexual act that's happening, but it's weird. The cinematography kind of shoots around it. It doesn't talk about the act itself. It shows you Chiron's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So the hand in the sand, the gripping of the sand. So because what it is, yes, it is a sexual act in nature. It's what he's missing in his life is intimacy and attachments and warmth and love.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that he's missing. And for the first time in his life, his whole life, I'm talking about even when he was a child to now, he's experiencing that for the first time with Kevin.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously Kevin still has his repression with that. So, again, there we go back to what we're talking about when they go back to the knockdown game.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of having a laugh about it, Kevin and the bully, saying, oh yeah, I remember I knocked his ass down, he didn't get back up, that kind of stuff. Oh, good times, good times. And the bully goes, I think we should play that game again. Because he's a very intimidating looking guy. It's really hard to say no to, you know? So, and then he obviously goes, I'll tell you when, I'll pick the target. There's no problem. And then eventually, with us at home, watching this movie, we know who the target is going to be. Jermaine is like, just say his name. And then you get this very, it's a very tense moment actually, because I know you're saying, again, I think the way it's shot, it's building up to an instant. Because what you're seeing is a lot of long pans, but it's fast, because it's almost like circling around Chiron.
Yeah.
Just like they are. It's like a pack of dogs, hyenas, or even vultures circling his prey.
It's almost like you're seeing what he's seeing in that moment. It's
And the panic.
Yeah.
The panic sets in, because you're thinking, it's got they're circling me so fast, and you can't keep up. So, and then eventually, Kevin comes, and he starts punching Chiron. And it's again, another heartbreaking scene, because he's shouting to him, stay down. Stay down, Chiron. He doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. Because Chiron has had enough of life beating the utter crap out of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's had it his whole life. And now, the one person who showed him that love and affection is the one beating him down.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that special, beautiful, intimate moment that they had meant nothing in that particular moment. But obviously, in hindsight, we know it mean the world to the pair of them.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. Yeah. It's a beautiful moment they'll never forget. So, he's all battered and bruised. He gets taken to the principal's office, and he's getting asked, are you going to press charges and so on? And he goes, no, I'm not going to press charges, but it's going to keep happening. The usual blah 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 that happens and stuff. And then, next day, he goes back to school. Because remember, again, this film is almost as well deals with the choices you make in life and the impact of those choices.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a huge turning point for Chiron that happens here. So also you can tell by the way he gets up, he gets and he starts walking to school, the way he's walking, it's like a red rag to a bull. He knows his target and he's just storming through those doors.
When watching it,
he doesn't
just,
even
you can
think
tell
he just,
you know,
the anger was there.
You know, and I even hate seeing these words. It felt like, I don't know how to word this without sounding quite bad about it. I watched a film called Elephant, which dealt with the Columbine School Massacre. It reminded me of that ever so slightly. Because I'll be honest, the first thing I watched that, I was back in my head, I'm thinking, what is he going to do? Has he got a gun on him?
It's like he was just so full of rage that anything could have happened.
All that rage is built up inside. This is the masculine nature being unleashed in him. So, and again, it's a long, single take. This tracking shot all the way through the school. Kicks the door open to the front door, kicks the door open to the assembly hall, and all the way through to his class. He storms in. He doesn't break a beat at all. No, exactly. The bully's kind of laughing at him. who gets the last laugh. But eventually, Chino picks up the chair, smacks him with the chair, and now he's down. And no way is he getting up from that anytime soon. No. Mm-hmm. And then, but Chino has to be held back because he wasn't going to stop there. His peers and a teacher had to intervene to stop him from doing it any further damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then the next shot we see, this is really cements home the heartbreak of the entire situation. Mm-hmm. He gets put in the back of the cop car, the lights are flashing, signs are going, and Kevin is standing, making eye contact, staring at him.
Yeah.
They're going, what have you done?
Yeah.
What have you done? It's weird. A few takeaways from that. The one main takeaway I take from that, it's almost like, what have we done? This is time that we could have had together.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You've taken that away for what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't blame Kevin for what happened.
No.
It's good.
See, that's one thing that I thought is that, obviously Kevin, I wouldn't say he would be as, pinpointed and, as targeted as Chiron would. But I think definitely, because there is that repressed, sexuality within him, that obviously he's going to be seen as a bit of an outcast in his school and maybe... Not that he's as extreme as Chiron is, but it definitely will be. So he sees this bully coming over him and trying to be friends with him as an opportunity to grow himself.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's survival instinct.
Yeah.
That's what people do in high school.
Yeah.
They almost hide their true selves or become someone else in order to fit in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, okay, let's be honest, at some stage of life, we have all done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I was really cool back then. I wanted a Helly Hansen jacket one time in school because everyone else wore one, and I didn't get one. My dad brought home this horrible yellow fisherman jacket from Marks and Spencer's for me. And I was like, Dad, that's nothing like the Helly Hansen jacket that I wanted to fit in and survive school. I felt like it's almost like you're sending a beacon. A literal bright yellow beacon to be targeted in high school. That, thank you, I'm not wearing that. So we digress. So, yeah, and that's how the chapter ends. See, that's how the chapter ends. Uh-huh. Then we get that kind of shades of purples and reds and blues on the screen. That's because every chapter assumes that, because if you look at the actual poster, I mean, those are the colours of the shades of the poster. Mm-hmm. As well, all almost on the spectrum of blue.
Yeah.
You know, I'm no art student, but I know that kind of on the same spectrum.
Yeah.
I approve. Thank you, Katie. So then, final chapter, black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As previously, black. So final chapter, and Chiron is completely and utterly unrecognisable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? One, he is built like he's the side of the house.
Yeah.
That's basically, Trevante Rhodes is a big physical actor who, after this film, went on to do a lot more action roles.
Mm-hmm.
To heavy segue, he starred in a film called The Predator, the sequel to The Predators. And I don't know if you've heard of the original film Predator.
Mm-hmm.
There's a famous line, he goes, get to the chopper!
Yeah.
That's my Arnold Schwarzenegger confession. Right? Famous line, right? In The Predator, right? They're escaping the alien, right? Mm-hmm. And Trevante Rhodes' character sees a number of motorcycles and says, geniusly, get to the choppers, because it's a nickname for motorbikes.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
I just, God, I hope it doesn't ruin his career. Because, I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger can deliver that line. Oh, no problem.
Yeah. It's the accent.
It's, yeah. Which I think I nailed, by the way.
Really did.
Yeah, you did.
Some people see I'm like an utter chameleon. I'm saying that all out for people who can actually act. I am not an actor, I'm a drama queen. Anyway, so his physical body is huge. He's wearing the muscle vest. He's also got the grill on his teeth, hasn't he?
The Ken Gold one.
Yeah. How do you eat?
You have to take it out.
You have to put it in
I think that's also like embarrassing. It's like having retainers. Like,
yeah,
it's like your teeth out in a glass of water on the head. I know what it's like. I've seen it on TV. You know, it's weird. He's got the do-rag on for his hair. But it's almost like how you know it's trying on, because in the second chapter, after he got beat up, he has the bowl of iced water in the sink,
mm-hmm.
and you have that moment where he splashes himself to wake himself up with the water.
Yeah.
Chiron does the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and when he's in the final chapter, see that's the link between them. And then what we find out about Chiron in this chapter, what is he?
Oh, drug dealer.
It's a drug dealer. Drug dealer. So here we go. Here is the impact that Juan, she does plenty. No, that's I keep saying that. I feel like I put that more of an accent on when I say Juan. I mean, I can't go Juan. It sounds like Scottish saying one. I'm pure man Juan. You mean so like Juan? Right. So anyway, it's a lot of digression. This podcast. A lot of digression. So yeah. Oh my god, I think I lost my train of thought there. I've been talking so much. Yeah, the water. So we're seeing the impact that Juan has had on Chiron.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. Because he always works the same way.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
He operates from his big muscle car the same way mm-hmm. as Juan did. He's got people on the street the same way he goes and checks on his dealers on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Operate the exactly same way. So again, is it, again, another theme unpacked here? Isn't it the theme of fathers and sons in that mm-hmm. as well? And the sons imitating the sins of the father as mm-hmm. well? Mm-hmm. See? So much to unpack from this movie, guys.
Yeah. Something else that I noticed is, like, in, like, I forgot his name. Chiron's car.
Yeah.
Like, it almost resembles, like, exactly, like, Juan's car. Like, it's almost like, I thought, because he got his car.
I just think his car's a black... Juan's is, like, a nice light blue, and his Chiron's is a black car.
But even, like, the ornaments inside, the stuff hanging from the, like, you know, like, the windscreen and stuff, like, it's literally, like, the exact same.
Gangster iconography.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, you have to have, like, the dice on the window from the mirror, stuff like that. So, yeah, definitely. But, again, I think this chapter, I think we can agree, was the weakest of the three.
Yeah.
Or because again, this is the chapter you expect these things to happen. Am I right, Keris?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what a big action scene!
Like action sequence.
Everybody dies.
It was shot in slow motion, and doves fly past the camera, Alan John Woo style.
I was
waiting for it. Love it. The potential was there.
Yeah.
It was there.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Jenkins, if you ever listen to this podcast, you squandered a unique opportunity. We're going to have a beautiful shootout in this film. But anyway, yeah. So, again, then we see that his mum has got... Again, she's better now.
Mm-hmm.
She's a lot older. Older. And she's doing better. She's working at a care home. But it also allows her to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
At the care home. Which is great. I mean, she's clean. And she's almost reflecting on how bad she was to Chiron.
Because
also that's a big part of Chiron becoming who he is today as well, was the absentee mother and the impact that she had. So there's that. So basically what Chiron is doing now, as well as selling drugs in this chapter, is he's almost like taking stock of his life, I think, with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like he's trying to fix relationships. I'm almost trying like he's trying to put a full stop.
Almost like, or get like,
closure.
Closure, yeah.
Closure.
Yeah.
It's all about closure this chapter.
Definitely.
Definitely. And I think that's partly why it kind of sizzles out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is closure. Because when someone's trying to seek closure, you are thinking about how stressed, how emotional, all that kind of stuff, because you don't have that closure yet. When you have that closure, you have that sense of sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to describe it. It's like almost like the film just ends with like
an exhale, like a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think that's I quite like that ending.
Me too.
Yeah, I quite like that about it. Stop. So yeah, but then obviously the mum, Paula, not the only character who's important in Chiron's life. Who's the other character I'm talking about?
Kate.
Kevin. Who randomly phoned him out the blue.
Yeah.
Out the blue. Because again, he knew roughly where he was going to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I was like, Kevin has been waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's been waiting for him. So yeah, we actually, when you take a step back and remember and look at it, that's why it's so such a beautiful film.
Yeah.
Because as well, what you find out, obviously, because what happens is he's in Miami and then he drives basically hours to meet Kevin,
mm-hmm,
who's now a chef or a cook.
Mm-hmm.
The food looks amazing. It
does look
good. Yeah.
You know, amazing. Good, you got a chef special. I was like, I would devour that in a second. You know what I mean? I mean, a big plate of rice and beans and chicken and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
that's great.
Yes, please.
Look good.
Yes, yeah. Please. But yeah, and obviously he's not of Mexican or Cuban descent, so he's making this like Spanish inspired fusion dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, what I quite liked about it is Kevin didn't recognise him. Because yeah, why would you?
No.
Yeah.
Why would you recognise him?
Mm-hmm.
Because Chiron, after his long journey, he's driving his vest and so on, and he parks the car, he gets out, he puts a vest, like a shirt on, over his vest, mm-hmm, or a t-shirt on, because he wants, it's almost like, it's really sweet, I think, about this, because what we've seen is this big, tough drug dealer who, to the point, he's trying to intimidate one of his dealers earlier on in the house.
Yeah.
Because I'm only playing with you. Mm-hmm. Scary scene. Mm-hmm. Could it be? You know what I mean? Could it be an incident? Give you action. Gunfight. Dumps. But yeah. And again, he's almost trying, it's almost like a first date.
Yeah.
Try
and impress him.
Try and impress him. And he takes the do-rag off and he brushes his hair. What's left of it? It's got a lot of hair, but he's still brushing it to make sure he's all presentable. And he walks in, and Kevin's working away. He goes, "Just okay, just sit at the counter, pal,
mm-hmm,
like you would a normal customer." And then eventually, what I love about, and even about Barry Jenkins' work, right? If you ever get a chance to watch his follow-up, If Beale Street Can Talk,
mm-hmm,
what you'll notice is Barry Jenkins is the master of close-ups.
Yeah.
What there's this such a beautiful portrait for me, because again, I don't know how he does it, I don't know how he connects them, but when you get a close-up of one of these actors, you're looking right into their soul. You're looking through their eyes into their soul, and they see right through you, and they see into you as well. And that moment, of that instant recognition from Kevin, because he goes, mm-hmm, to the, "What can I get you, buddy?" And then it clicks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you get a beautiful close-up of Chiron. It's, again, very close-upable,
yeah,
in a camera frame. And Kevin as well. It's a beautiful, intimate moment, and everything, all those feelings, all that love, all that intimacy just comes flooding back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love that about it. And so if you ever watch If Beale Street Can Talk, you have that same beautiful moments,
mm-hmm,
of the close-ups. It's just wonderful to see. And he's a master at it. I've never seen, mm-hmm, I haven't seen anyone do it as well since a man called Jonathan Demme in, mm-hmm, Science of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is all tofu close-ups. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Starling and he's Hannibal Lecter, yeah, master close up again. So yeah, so then they sit down and they kind of chat. It feels like two pals just catching up at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we're peeling back those, I'm going to use a nice onion metaphor here. Mm-hmm. We're peeling back, because it's food, it's culinary, you know?
Yeah.
Peeling back those onion layers,
yeah,
to that emotional, vulnerable core. So then, Kevin's finished his shift after giving the chef special, who he hardly touches it, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone noticed that.
He's so nervous, he can't eat.
I've been nervous, right? I've never been so nervous that I don't eat. I will eat.
It's like a first date, though. You go on your date and you're like, oh, don't.
You order a salad.
You order a salad just to be
in the corner of your
Then a first date happens, right? And then later on, like, they're like, oh, I don't want chips.
You take my fries, it's fine.
Yeah, or it's like, oh, it's like, I'm not gonna order chips. I'll take some yours. No, you get your own chips. You mean, or you do what Joey does with Friends,
yeah,
a buffer plate.
Yes.
So they can't get your chips, they go for the buffer plate. But sometimes they get ruined then, steal your chips. I've been worse than something on chips, Holly. Honestly.
That's true.
Has it happened to you?
Yeah.
How many times?
It's probably been me, to be honest.
How do you feel about it?
Salad.
Yeah. Well, you know, we did there. We kind of emotionally connected there.
That's
almost like in the film.
It's nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Nice. There you go. Anyway, don't steal chips. So then, eventually, Kevin invites Chiron back to his house,
mm-hmm,
and what we learn here is Kevin actually had a failed marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a kid.
Yeah.
He's got a kid. So it's all, again, it's what this film can, is in a way, and I've discussed this, I think, with the media classes, is this self-fulfilling prophecy, because they come from broken homes.
Mm-hmm.
They end up having their own broken home.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have these bunch of broken people, you know, and you're trying to put them all together again. And that's what the film is about. Mm-hmm. Healing broken people. You know, and that's why I find it quite poetic and beautiful at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it starts to kind of conquest, talk a wee bit again, but I'm getting shut down. But Kevin notices where that, again, still, he doesn't talk too much, Chiron. He's a man of few words.
Yeah.
It's always that way. He says something if it's important.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And that happens here. Because what happens, and again, this is the gut wrencher for the entire movie. This is what it's been leading up to. And they always have this kind of really close, intimate moment, because like they're really close to each other, but then they kind of break away and he's doing other things. And then out of the blue, Chiron just says, "No one's ever touched me the way you did."
Mm-hmm.
Not no other man,
mm-hmm.
no one. But has ever, since that moment when he was a teenager, has ever touched him the way that Kevin did. And I think that's what it's all about. It's about trying to find that love and intimacy and your place in the world with the person that you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And that's what makes Moonlight kind of special.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I said even before the film started, it's a film that inverts stereotypes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what you don't see, and unfortunately we do have this, it's the same way as minorities have been shown in film, they have these kind of horrible stereotypes for comical effect. Homosexuals have had the same. They've had, they're almost like the token funny homosexual character.
Yeah.
And it's not that the case at all. What you have is two very real people who happen to be homosexual as well, and that's what makes it even more beautiful, because they're real people, they're worthy people. And we're seeing just two men falling back in love again.
Yeah.
And then this is when it comes to Kelsey's favourite bit, because it's because I didn't see any on Kelsey, that's why. Right? Because I think what happened to you is you checked the time and how much was left.
I was just sitting watching it, and then I'm like, okay, how long we got left? I'm tired. And then I checked, I had like 1 minute left, and I'm like, oh, what happened? Were they missing a chunk of the film?
So you're thinking, there's going to be one bombastic minimal filmmaking. There's going to be Michael Bay here.
So I thought they built up to such like a sweet moment. They had their sweet moment, and then I thought it was going to be like destroyed and like something would happen, and then I don't know. I thought it would be a sad ending, but it was a sweet ending.
It was sweet, yeah. Again, I think we've spoken about this before we started today's podcast, it's a film that shows, doesn't tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have this ambiguous ending, because as you say, again, it cuts abruptly to that beautiful shot of Little on the beach in the moonlight.
Yep, yeah.
It's a beautiful shade of blue. I mean, it's probably one of the most stunning shots I have seen in a very long time. Beautifully shot, beautifully composed and colourised.
Mm-hmm.
Is we have to kind of join the dots by looking between the lines of how they've been portrayed and how Kevin reacted to Chiron saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say the very fact that Kevin is living alone, a life of solitary, Chiron has been living a life of solitary confinement to an extent. These two lost souls, two broken people, have come together. Chiron, the fact he said that sentence shows you that we have a huge level of self-acceptance because he left his life behind dealing drugs because Kevin phoned him. Because that's the person he's meant to be with. And we know for a fact now, by watching that and talking about it though, that Chiron and Kevin are going to be okay. We don't need to see them drive into the sunset like Greece. Why does a car fly in Greece? Are they dead?
I love that bit though.
Can you imagine? I just feel like I don't know, did the maker just get really high and go, I've got an idea, guys. The car flies, like, brilliant, do it, go. John, I love you, in the car, we're going to make you fly. Mental. We don't really see that, but hey, that's drugs for you. But yeah, so again, this is coming to the end of our first podcast of the year 2023. So again, thank you everyone at home for listening. As always, thank you to our wonderful Film Society members for coming along and helping out. And again, for our new newcomers, I find it pretty well, guys. What do you think?
Yeah, we're really good. Yeah,
and do you have them back.
We'll see.
The jury's still out.
Yeah.
Oh, you have them back.
Maybe.
That's a lot of your love. So I almost forgot as well what I got to do, guys.
Rank
the rating out of five.
Ranking.
But so before we do this rating, this is again, I'm currently doing a wee goal for 2023. Sight and Sound Movie Magazine, right, release the top 100 films of all time. They do it every 10 years. They get filmmakers and they get film critics to compile a list of what the top 100 films of all time are, and I'm making my way through them every week, so it's quite fun. A lot of time myself. The wife's a social worker, she works a lot. Right, so in Moonlight is actually one of the only films from the 2010s to be on that list. Other one's Parasite.
Nice. We've done both of them.
So again, how high caliber is our podcast, by the way, guys? I mean, two films that appear in the top 100 films of all time. Crazy. So again, we have one rule and one rule only for this, guys. No decimals. It's a round number. It's not. I have to get 4.75 out of 5.
And this is why.
And if you disagree, I'm going to argue with you. Because both Kenneth and Katie have been receiving names.
We've been victims.
Yeah. They have been victims of this atrocity. All right. So, Morgan, I'm going to come to you first.
Okay.
To compare this film. Out of 5, what do you think that you get this film out of 5? Can you give me a quick little reason why after that?
I think I would give it a 4.
A 4? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm not the one recognising that.
I think I would give it a 4 because I liked how the acting was really good for me. Like, there wasn't a lot of words, but there was a lot of emotions. Like, I like how you're talking about the close-up shots. You could get so much from just silence. But I still, like, understood it completely, I thought.
Silence, but silence is golden.
There's a lot of eye acting.
Yeah, eye acting. I love it.
But I think there was maybe wee things missing that I would like to... I don't...
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, but I apart from that, it's very good.
I understand why people didn't love it at the same time. So, yeah. Emily, anyway, you're up.
I think I would agree. I would give it a 4 out of 5 as well.
4 out of 5.
It focuses on some strong, important topics, and it's done really well. Like, it's portrayed beautifully. Like,
not quite yet to get the full 5.
Yeah, not quite there to get the full 5, but it was done really well.
Sorry, guys, I was pausing for silence. I was being proud there. Kenneth, you're up.
I think... After a first watch, you're gonna moan at me.
Positive place.
I would have given it a 2 after watching it. After discussing it, in detail, I'll give it a 3. That's half. But I mean, without sounding like Harry Styles, it's a movie for people who like movies. It's a movie. It's a movie for people who appreciate the artistic side of films. For me, I need to be stimulated. I need to be action, like people dying and stuff. And it just wasn't for me. But it's a good film. I understand why it won the Oscar.
It's funny how you say people dying, so like doing scream.
I mean, no.
No.
Because that's not true. Because it didn't actually happen.
Yeah, because he's coming back.
If he is.
Round 2. Well, no.
It's like we literally saw his guts go to the floor, man.
But did we see him die?
Yes! Graphically!
No. The event testing's on the ground, was it? It was like, simple,
did. Did you guys see that? I mean, are you expecting something in the hospital?
That's what I wanted to see. If he was dead, that would be shown.
Okay, so we've got 2 4s, we've got a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been a 2.
Benefit the doubt.
Still okay. Katie?
It's a 5 for me, 100%. Oh. It's one of those films, I kind of, the opposite of Keris, that when I say, like, I feel like this film was just pure emotion. It just totally, anyone who watches, I feel like it can just totally hit in some way for them. Like, it's the things that are left unsaid that I feel like speak the most volumes in the film.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. I think it's just, I mean, obviously it is like a film for people who, like, if you analyse it, but even if you don't, it's just like one of those things where you're just like, oh, it just feels so real.
It was just like raw emotion.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's like a raw, nerve opening up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Right, so five, we've got a five.
Yeah.
Holly.
I give it a four.
Oh, nice, nice. Any particular like reason why you got a four?
It was good.
That's a Holly we love, guys. No beating in the bush. So give it a four, because it's good. Love it. That's why.
That's why.
So, you know my answer, it's a five. So, again, I think I've said this before at some point to you. It's definitely an art piece, an art movie, and I feel like the way you go to an art gallery and nothing has to happen, you can stand yourself and immerse yourself in a piece of art, mm-hmm. and it speaks to you on so many different levels, and I think this film does that for me. It's just, it's almost like, yeah, I think you're right about it, for people who love movies,
mm-hmm.
it's also a film, if you want to make films, you should study.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you should study, because it defies expectations, it inverts stereotypes, it shows you how you can play with structure on that as well, it shows you how to do this on a budget. But the very fact that Naomi Harris filmed her Paula scenes in 3 days. 3 days she filmed for that.
That's crazy.
Crazy, yeah. Crazy, do you know what I mean? So yeah, I think for me, Barry Jenkins is one of our most important filmmakers working today. So... so that's the complete opposite of what Kara said. I'm sorry. So, yeah, we have officially come to the end of our podcast. Wow, this is the longest we've had in a long time. So, first of all, I just want to thank everyone at home for listening, as always. Again, our wonderful society members. Our next episode of the podcast, we are going to be talking about After Sun. And I think it's safe to say we're very excited about that one.
Yep.
Paul Mescal, loyal.
Love him.
Yeah, I know. And the Oscar-nominated Paul Mescal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently he's got like every time I'm on Twitter now, I keep reading about how he's started a new film again. He's like, he's
not big.
He's going to stop.
Ball.
No, but as always, guys, thank you so much for listening. Feel free to share and comment and chat to us if you want to. Any comments about that? And yeah, thank you and goodbye.